The Jason Rant Show.
Jason Rant hosts a radio show in Seattle, and he has, as always, the details for us exclusively.
Jason Rant, our Seattle guy, is with us now.
Jason Rant, always great to have you in focus. Thank you.
Hey, Jason, I think you're all right, and thanks for being on the show.
An update on what's happening in your Pacific Northwest.
My friend Eric Erickson from Atlanta, host of the Eric Erickson Show, stops by to analyze the Herschel Walker controversy. We're told that he paid an ex-girlfriend to get an abortion. He's very much pro-life. Will this impact the Senate race? Do people actually believe that this happened? We're going to get into it with Eric. We'll hear from one of the four victims in the University District shooting from the weekend. Plus, we talk with Whatcom County Sheriff Bill Elfo, who says the county is facing just a perfect storm, surging crime and too few deputies. What's to blame? Democrat reforms on policing. We're going to get to those stories and so much more this hour of the Jason Rant Show, brought to you by StreetTalkFinancial.com. So let's get into it.
The monologue.
Economy's not going so well. I know we're being told that it's great, it's strong, everything's wonderful. Thank you so much, Joe Biden. You cured what ails us. You brought back jobs. Things are thriving. Everyone's happy, except, of course, there are very few people who are truly happy. The president of the San Francisco Federal Reserve, her name is Mary Daly, and she was just on with CNN. And she said, yeah, sure, people might have higher wages right now, and that's true for many people. But that doesn't really matter when the value of the dollar isn't as high as it used to be.
Even when it's so-called a great time for workers, they are losing value every time they go to the store. Their purchasing power is falling. Some little-known statistic that I think is really worth bringing up, real wages adjusted for inflation, average worker in America has lost 9% over the course of the last two years.
That's right.
That's not a good time to be a worker. Right now, things are out of balance, and we are committed to bringing them back in balance.
It's so weird. I thought, and we were told this, and correct me if I'm wrong, maybe check Wikipedia, but I was told that people are making more money and wages have never been higher. Is that not true?
No, Wikipedia says that's not true.
Oh, that's weird. And Wikipedia lies all the time. And they're actually being honest about this? That's so odd. What's going on? I thought inflation was kind of just going to, what was it, transitory? It wasn't really going to go away or stay around for too long before going away. And then kind of was here for a bit, but that's because, yeah, everyone knows that capitalism is evil, and that's what happened, and the greedy capitalists are responsible and whatnot. But you still, and we're not in a recession at all because we redefined recession. Maybe we redefined inflation. What's going on here? Why are things so bad? I wonder if a comment made during a speech by Janet Yellen is part of the reason why things are not really going in the right direction.
Since January of last year, the Biden-Harris administration has made racial equity a centerpiece of our economic agenda. Advancing racial equity is not just a moral priority, it is also vital to our economic success.
Interesting. So you're failing then, because we're not being successful, economically speaking, or are we? Is this what we're considering to be a success? I'm not entirely sure I understand what direction we're going through. And by the way, the whole equity thing, explain to me how you as the Treasury Secretary are helping keep things equitable. For one, we know that, to use your term, the BIPOC community will hold jobs that don't make as much as white people. We're told that all the time because of institutionalized racism. So assuming that that is the truth, assuming that that is a fact, how exactly is it that you are helping the equity when it comes to inflation, meaning that the person's dollar is not going as far as it used to be? So often you hear these politicians just throw out these buzzwords, and equity is one of them. Everything's about equity. And they say it as a symbol of, yeah, don't you worry, I'm on your side. I'm on your side. I'm woke, I'm down, I'm helping, I'm progressive. Oh, yeah, what are the results of you just screaming out equity all the time? No, just equity. Yeah, no, I got that, but what are the results? Equity. That is what you're pursuing. I got it. But what is the end result? Equity. you're just saying the word over and over and over again. Equity. I've got to go to the bathroom. Can I leave? Equity. It's just a word that doesn't mean anything. And they throw out these words in the absence of a plan. They throw out these words to justify a lack of results, because you can sit back and say, okay, well, at least the hearts were in the right place. They were trying to push against white supremacy and in favor of equity, and it just didn't go. That's not something any of us should settle for. People are struggling right now, deeply. And the folks in the Biden administration are either blind to the suffering, or they just don't care, because they're trying to pursue something called equity that really isn't properly defined. And certainly it's not what we used to think equity was. At one point, we used to say equity means equal access, but the left has redefined that to say equal outcomes. And maybe because they know not everyone can reach a certain level of salary, of net worth, that not all of us can be millionaires and billionaires. Instead of trying to get everyone to that level, they're trying to bring everyone down to the same level. That doesn't seem like a smart strategy. It's certainly not equity.
The interview.
As we said earlier on in the show, Herschel Walker is not having a good day. He is being accused by the Daily Beast of back in 2009 of paying for his girlfriend at the time to have an abortion. Herschel Walker is very much pro-life publicly. This, if true, suggests that maybe his words don't match his actions. At the same time, his son went on a very lengthy Twitter tirade to call him out for lying. Joining me on the line is someone who's following this very, very closely. He is a syndicated host based out of Atlanta, Eric Erickson. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So what do you make, just sort of big picture, of this controversy?
Yeah, listen, Republicans in Georgia overnight, as the story broke, they weren't as freaked out by the Daily Beast report. They've expected attacks. They were really freaked out by his son and his Twitter thread essentially throwing his dad under the bus. By the morning, I think that they kind of set in, you got 5 weeks if he can, over the next 72 hours, pivot back to focusing on the economy and essentially make the argument that Warnock and the Democrats are attacking me and my family to avoid discussing what they've done to your family. He probably can salvage this, but it's going to be a very close race either way.
Yeah, no, and it was going to be a close race regardless of this particular issue. But it's the Christian Walker video that he posted today that I just think is so damning. And it to me, it kind of came out of nowhere. And I was talking to a lot of folks who kind of thought he was always super supportive of his father.
Well, he had been. And that's kind of the frustrating thing. I think if you talk to people in the Walker camp, they don't want to attack Walker's son. Walker loves his son, but he's kind of glommed onto his father, it seems, in the last year, helped promote his father and Donald Trump. And then to turn on a dime after the Daily Beast story, they're kind of wondering what's going on. Behind the scenes, the team says Herschel Walker is still very supportive of his son and is going to try to avoid talking about that issue and do his best to pivot back to the economy and crime.
Well, media outlets in Atlanta and really just Georgia in general allow for that?
I don't know that they will. He's going to have to pour some money in an ad campaign to do this, to try to bypass the media, which he's largely done. He's run be seen, go on the campaign trail sort of campaign. Mm-hmm. He's avoided much of the local press, and the local press is all over the story, though. A lot of people who thought, well, this is just going to be an online phenomenon, woke up to it being the dominant story all over the news in Georgia.
Realistically, from a public standpoint, how much interest is there in this story?
There's a lot of interest because it comes down to control of the Senate, and that's what makes it fascinating. Had you asked me 2 days ago, I would say the probability is that Walker wins. I still think it's possible. It's just not as probable today, given the news headlines. There were 28,000 Republicans who – 28,000 voters who refused to vote at all in the presidential race in 2020. That gave Biden the win. If those people sit out again, it probably helps Warnock.
Here's just always kind of interesting to try to figure this out. Let's say you're a Republican in Georgia and you're very much pro-life and you believe this story. You believe that Herschel Walker paid his girlfriend to get an abortion. Do you push that aside and vote for him knowing that control of the Senate is on the line? How do you think people react to that scenario?
Because it's, you know, I don't know what the bigger camp is. Those who say, I'm tired of both guys, I'm not going to vote, or control of the Senate matters most. My suspicion is people are so angry about Joe Biden, the economy mm-hmm. dominates all other issues and crime in Georgia, that a lot of people will say, I'm voting for the Republicans. Walker just happens to be their candidate.
Yeah, and we're starting to see more and more evidence of abortion kind of going away as an issue. I don't know if it's necessarily fair to judge Google searches. CNN
right.
looked at the Google searches, and obviously it's going to go down now versus when it was overturned. Just normal people who have no connection even to getting an abortion or vote on this might Google that to get news. So I don't know if that's the right way to look at things.
Well, look, in Georgia, those people were already going to vote for Raphael Warnock, but the state overall tends to be rather pro-life. The state passed the fetal heartbeat ban. Republicans actually picked up a majority of the statewide vote the year after that ban passed. So I don't think that issue is going to hurt Walker. The issue is for the pro-life Christians who kind of they're grossed out by the politics of it. Yeah. Do they still say we got to have accountability in Washington? That may push Walker over the line still.
Well, fingers crossed. There's a lot on the line.
Yeah.
And certainly I think most people can say Senator Warnock is not the right fit for Georgia, but we will find out in a few weeks. Eric Erickson, show host, Eric Erickson, joining me on the line. You can get his podcast wherever it is you get your podcast. Of course, you can check out ericericksonshow.com. Eric, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now this.
The monologue.
So one of the victims in one of the many shootings in Seattle over the weekend is speaking up. This was the shooting that took place after a bar brawl. Some argument ended up leading to someone pulling a gun, firing it at the other person, ends up shooting four bystanders. They weren't doing anything. They were just there. And luckily, all four of them are okay. These were minor wounds, but that is complete luck. One guy who got lucky, his name is Paul Garza. And not only was he shot, but apparently his friend was too. We spoke with Cairo 7 TV.
I look down and one of my friends says my ankle's bleeding. Just for everyone involved, it was just a big shock.
Obviously, that's going to shock people. That's going to shock people. And obviously, when you are surrounded by an obvious increase in crime, that is obviously tied to Democrat policies, that is obviously getting worse, you're going to have to ramp up some security.
A lot of lights hanging, we're going to try putting more lights in. I'm going to try to see if we can get some more cameras, but we're going to work to make it better.
Now, the key word in this conversation is obvious. We know what's happening. We can tie everything that we're experiencing to some sort of policy. Everything. And that means a fix. If you don't want to hear more stories from people like Paul, if you don't want to hear more stories from business owners who are needing to ramp up security measures to ensure that their people, their customers are safe, that their staff is safe, if you don't want to have any of these conversations again and you want to actually address it, you have to make political moves. You have to act out politically. That's the only way you're going to change things. The only way we go back to a level of respect for law enforcement, the only way we can reverse course is to literally get rid of the laws that made this a reality in Seattle, in Tacoma, in Everett. Every single person listening to me right now has been negatively impacted, either directly or indirectly, by the police reforms. We're supposed to pretend they're reforms. They're not. They're not reforms. Reforms implies that you're making something better out of a need. They're not. They made things worse. It's so clear that they made things worse. We're going to talk with Whatcom County Sheriff Bill Elfo in a bit to make that point. But the fact of the matter is, we have to get rid of the laws. There's not a single Democrat politician outside of maybe Mark Mullett, state senator from Issaquah, good guy. Other than him, there's not a single Democrat who's coming out and saying, I'm going to lead the cause. We will reverse course. We will fix these mistakes, because then they would have to acknowledge that they made a mistake to begin with, and they refuse to. Jesse Johnson, one of the architects of the suite of bills that reimagine policing, he doesn't think there's any problem whatsoever. When you look nationally, Democrats are saying there's no problem. What crime crisis? There's no crime crisis. They are not going to change. If they're talking about this now during a election cycle. What do you think they're going to do if you keep them in office? They're going to accelerate what it is they're doing and the changes they're trying to make. So you have to get in the way by making sure we're putting the right people in positions of power. And most importantly, we're replacing the bad ones.
The interview.
Another day, another parent getting a better look at some of the curriculum in front of his fourth grade daughter's class, all having to do with sex ed. He was pretty shocked at what was being taught or what was being proposed this semester. Joining me on the line is a father from a Kitsap County school. He joins me now. His name is Brad. Brad, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
We're choosing not to name the school because we don't want to cause any strife for your kid. But take us through what happened.
Oh, you know, it's almost a where do we begin? And first off, I love the school, love the administration, love the principal, the teachers. And I mean that 100% sincerely. They're fantastic people. But, you know, there was a case of bullying last year when, like you said, she was in the fourth grade at that time, now in fifth grade. And the bullying scenario turned into that they're going to teach a quick sex ed and what you can say and not say to other kids. They didn't notify us. And there was some teaching going on about the differences in sexuality and what it's not okay to say to another boy or a girl. And it just was inappropriate. I was never notified that they were going to have this quick sexual education against bullying in our classes. So my daughter came home. Literally, and not figuratively, but she was sick to her stomach because she lives with a mom and a dad, and we keep her kind of sheltered from those inappropriate topics. So that's for us to discuss and teach.
Well, and if you could clarify, what specifically was the content? Because there might be a difference for a fourth grader at the time who is sheltered from a lot of this information and others maybe not so. I guess it depends on how extreme some of the language was.
Correct. And there was nothing vulgar or anything. It was more educational based. I mean, they're talking about how it's, you know, sometimes girls like girls and sometimes boys like boys and sometimes, and that's all okay. And we like that. And she felt, in her words, that she was being encouraged to start looking towards a relationship.
Oh, wow. And your fourth graders are what, 10, 11 years old?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, she's just not at that point. Now, we both know. I mean, I can remember back to when I was in fourth grade and I thought girls were cute and this and that, just normal progression of kids. And like you said, some kids may be there, other kids are not. But for the kids that are not there, we don't want to push them towards that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how many 10-year-olds are at that point, in all honesty. That seems just, for that kind of conversation, seems too young to me.
Absolutely. You know, it's the encouragement of anything. A bullying class is, hey, we like everybody. And if we don't like everybody, we don't say anything not nice,
yeah.
Right? Be nice or be quiet. And it really should be that simple. It doesn't matter if they're teaching about bullying physically or emotionally or being mean. And bullying's bullying no matter how you slice mm-hmm. it. And that would have been, of course, perfectly fine. But when she came home sick to her stomach, it means things were discussed, in her opinion, that were uncomfortable and unwarranted and unwanted. And so I ended up meeting with the principal, who, again, I have the highest respect for, and the counselor who gave the class. And when speaking with the counselor face-to-face with the principal there, we just discussed, did you say these things that my daughter should be not saying bad things? And of course, she agreed. Did you bring up the fact that my daughter is okay if she's interested in another girl romantically or a boy being romantic with another boy? Those just aren't topics for a school.
Yeah, right? I think you're right. And the big picture question is, again, is this age appropriate? And that should just be question number one. And then number two, I think it's just, is it appropriate? Like, is it relevant? Is this the right time? Is there a reason to do this conversation, have this conversation right now? And I think most people would say, again, 11 years old, 12 years old, a little bit too early. I'll give you the last word.
It is too early. And the biggest issue is it's the direction we're headed in. It's not just this topic. It's the sexual classes that are coming up for fifth graders starting this year. And it's all planned by Planned Parenthood. So it's going to be, we already know how that's going to be jaded.
Yeah, no kidding.
There's some organizations out there fighting against this that recently found out about. Informed Parents of Washington has mm-hmm. been fighting against this for a couple of years, but it's already passed and it's already coming. And it's a very detailed situation, sexually teaching children things that are just inappropriate. Yeah. And I just don't know where to go with it. I don't know why we're not opting into these things rather than trying to opt out of these things.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know why, right? They don't want you to opt out. So this is a good reminder for folks, courtesy of our friend Brad in Kitsap County, to check in with the curriculum, not only around CRT and gender identity, but looking at something as seemingly innocuous as just general sex ed. You assume that these conversations are going to be age appropriate. I wouldn't make that assumption. I would question all of the curriculum if I were a parent. So I think that's what folks should do, and be confident in knowing you can pull your kid from some of these courses. These are not something that the school is going to force upon your kid. It is an opt-out system when we're talking about sex ed. So choose to opt out. You know your kid more than I would, of course. So make the right decision on behalf of your son or daughter. Brad.
Yeah, and the parents, they need to get into SB 5395.
Yep.
SB 5395. They need to know about it.
Absolutely. Because, again, all we talk about the importance of elections. This is one of those bills that were passed because we don't have control in the Senate or frankly, in the House. So winning one of those chambers yep. will go a long way. Brad, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.
The Jason Rand Show.
Jason Rand has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke this story. He joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion, Jason. Definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
Speaking of laying it down, Whatcom County Sheriff Bill Elfo has come out and said, we're dealing with a perfect storm, a crisis on our hands. Not only is Whatcom County seeing a surge in crimes, all sorts of crimes, they're also seeing a surge of job openings, position openings within the department. They are losing staff at the worst possible time. Joining me on the line is Whatcom County Sheriff Bill Elfo. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
You know, when you look at Whatcom County in particular, I remember just a few months ago, some stat that was just astronomical in the increase in stolen cars and break-ins. Obviously, you're also dealing with your share of violent crime. What can you tell us just sort of big picture about what's going on the ground?
Well, we're seeing rises in crime rather dramatic, you know, in the first quarter of the year, which is the last verified numbers we have. We saw auto theft go up by 600%.
Jeez.
But when we're dealing with this new so-called police reform and criminal justice legislation, when we're dealing with the lack of jail space that's been ignored for decades, and now we're seeing an exodus of law enforcement professionals from both our patrol and from our correction staff, and not having those positions filled just compound the problem and lead to what I call a perfect storm.
What is the perfect storm? What is the other half of that? Take us through the staffing issue.
Well, the staffing issue has become rather dramatic. Since the legislation limiting what law enforcement can do, be able to serve the people like they took an oath to do, took effect. Since the increased civil and criminal liability for officers, and from my perspective and from the officer's perspective, limited to the due process they have when their professional certification or licensure is under review by the State Criminal Justice Training Commission, we've seen officers leave. They're leaving. Some are leaving to work in law enforcement in other states mm-hmm. that don't have these issues. Others are electing to retire early. We had planned on staying longer. And some are just getting out of the business altogether and going into other professions. And we're losing a lot of good people. And the time it takes to recruit, train, and get somebody ready for street duty can be a year to a year and a half. So we're having a difficult time.
And we know that this is happening.
Just germane.
Yeah, and just real quickly, we know that it's happening all across the state and really all across the country. This isn't just something that's happening in Whatcom County.
No, it's happening across the state. And what's happening there is other agencies are becoming very competitive with each other.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to recruit people from other agencies, and that makes it just a very difficult environment. And then agencies that don't have the funding, as some of them do in the King County area, are trying to compete with the $30,000 and more signing bonuses some agencies are offering in Snohomish and King and Pierce counties.
One of the architects of the so-called reform bills is Jesse Johnson, state representative from Federal Way, Democrat, obviously. And he tweeted last week or week and a half ago, the legislature did what needed to be done, and some police got angry because their culture must shift and they can't go around killing people. What's your response to that?
That is absurd. I think we have a very professional culture of law enforcement, and what we've seen is mobs of people trying to attribute something that happened in other states, Minnesota in particular, and try to attribute it as a problem that's germane in Washington that required a response in terms of sweeping legislation that really is turning in our society, from my perspective, into one of chaos, lawlessness, and disorder. We're abandoning the rule of law that's needed for a civilized society.
Where do you think the disconnect is between law enforcement and folks like Jesse Johnson, and even in some cases with the Fraternal Order of Police, which endorsed Jesse Johnson's legislation?
Well, I'm amazed at what the Fraternal Order of Police has done. I've been a member of the Fraternal Order of Police for over 49 years, and I'm going to be sending that membership card back. They're certainly not looking at the welfare of our officers or the safety of our citizens. They have other motivations to support that legislation, support the people that sponsor it, promote it, and push it forward.
What do you think that motivation is?
Well, that motivation is, I think they're trying to solve a problem that really doesn't exist in Washington State. As I've said, we have very professional law enforcement here. I think every state probably has a few bad apples, but we don't have any pervasive issues with police brutality or police killing people. I've sat through some of the hearings where citizens testified in favor of various legislation on police reform, and they're telling these stories about, people being killed by law enforcement for no reason. And you go back and you do a little research and you find out that, the person had a gun and was threatening officers. And I think there's a lot of nonsense involved.
I've said this a number of times. Whenever you see any protester who's got a sign that has a whole bunch of names and photos of what they say are victims of police brutality, you can literally pick any of them. Just pick a random one you've never heard of, and just do a Google search. And you will find out that there is much more to the story that they don't want you to know about. They believe it would appear, a lot of these activists believe, that any use of force from officers is wrong. And I don't know how one can debate in the context of someone holding that belief.
No, and there's the collective voice of law enforcement in Washington, the voice for professional law enforcement, is the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs. For nearly seven decades, they've been providing information on the legislature, work with the legislature to remedy problems and perceptions. But this time, from my perspective, they were wholly ignored. Mm-hmm. And those in power just decided to march forward with the sweeping, drastic, and not very well thought out legislation.
Well, they had the Fraternal Order of Police to provide them some cover, because that's exactly what Jesse Johnson is doing. By the way, we're talking with Whatcom County Sheriff Bill Elfo. That's exactly what Representative Johnson is doing. He's saying to justify his bills, which, again, we know are leading to more deaths and more crime. He's saying, well, why would the Fraternal Order of Police support it? And as of now, they're too cowardly to come on the show. They've been on multiple times. They won't respond to me.
I talk to law enforcement officers here. They're leaving. They're looking for other jobs, not just in the sheriff's office, but other departments in our county. And really, I have friends across the state, and they are unified in the position that this legislation has really had a very, very detrimental effect on our ability to keep the public safe. And they don't support that. So I'm not sure who the FOP is speaking for. Will they, you know, I know they trade off collective bargaining issues for legislative votes sometimes when they're involved in representing bargaining units. But I put the protection of our citizens, the protection of our officers, and the rule of law and public safety number one.
Yeah.
And I think any sane person that looks at that would have the same view.
Short of repealing the laws that were passed, and I think it's safe to assume none of them will be repealed. They might get altered. What do you think can change the trajectory of this state as it relates to not just the rise in crime, but the rise in separations of just law enforcement officers just choosing to leave?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that won't fix it. It's just simply throwing money at the problem. I mean, officers need to be compensated fairly. But we have—I have people that have left to take jobs in law enforcement that pay one third of what they were making here, and going to Oklahoma, places like that that don't have as high a salaries. I think they want the ability to do their job and know the public has their back, and that's going to be reflected in the legislation that gives them adequate protections.
Do you think there'll be any progress in this upcoming legislative session, or might it depend on what happens in November?
I've gone to lots of public meetings, and the public is fed up with it. Majority of the people here in Whatcom County strongly support law enforcement, and we hear that over and over again, and they're shocked when they find out what the legislature has done. They don't understand all the impacts, and I see my job is to educate them, and so we'll see what happens in November if there's some changes and new people coming in with a different perspective. They'll at least listen to law enforcement and do what's right for the safety of our community.
Yeah, and your county has a lot on the line. I mean, you've got the reelection of Simon Sefcik, a Republican who was appointed to the position after Doug Erickson passed. He's running up against someone who's very, very far to the left on this issue.
Right, yeah, there's a lot of elections coming up across the state, and certainly people should look at the voting record of see how the candidates, both candidates voted if they were incumbents on the on this legislation, and also look at what they plan to do moving forward.
There you go. Whatcom County Sheriff Bill Elfo, I really do appreciate you opening up and talking about these issues. I think it's very, very important. People are concerned, and it's important to get the full picture. And unfortunately, a lot of media outlets aren't delivering that. So thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Right, and thank you for what you're doing and trying to help educate the public as the extent of the problem here and across the country.
I appreciate that. Again, that's Whatcom County Sheriff Bill Elfo. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle top radio host Jason Rants. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rants is in focus now.
Jason Rants, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
So we've been talking a little bit about the different issues that are facing this country that will likely play a role, significant or otherwise, in the midterm elections. Now, a lot of the issues, as I've said, actually on the show, kind of depend on where you live. And so you and I are obviously paying close attention to, and we talk a lot about the issues at the border because we understand that it impacts us in a very direct way, courtesy of the flow of drugs coming into this country. Not everyone necessarily sees it that way. Not everyone sees the border issue as an issue for them if they are in Maine, if they are in Ohio, if they're living in North Dakota. That might not be top of mind. But it is incredibly important because the drugs that are coming across this border are flooding our streets, whether we're talking about Enumclaw or we're talking about Topeka. Understand that all across the country, we are being impacted by the flood of illegal migrants, some of whom are bringing across the border drugs. We know this as a matter of fact. And there doesn't seem to be any interest in stopping it. None. And so we look at what's going on in the state of Texas and the race between Beto O'Rourke, who is an open borders Democrat who likes to pretend he's not, and Greg Abbott, who is obviously the Republican incumbent who's been paying close attention to this and has been part of what I have called and agree are political stunts to bus folks out of the state to more sanctuary cities. I think it's an important political stunt. It doesn't diminish what it is he's doing. I think it's incredibly important. So over the weekend, the two had their debate. And again, Beto O'Rourke is this guy who kind of changes positions on a dime, all while trying to convince you that he's a Latino so he can get votes from the Latino community, because that's how little he thinks of the Latino community, that all he has to do is go by the name Beto instead of his name Robert. And again, I have no problem people changing their names. It's just that he's trying to do it with the intent of convincing people he's Latino. So they obviously got into border security. And when it comes to the border, Beto O'Rourke has always tried to have it kind of both ways. He talks out of both sides of his mouth. He's an open borders Democrat who has said many, 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 many times, and then add a few more manys to that many times, that he doesn't want to prosecute people who are crossing the border illegally. He says that pretty consistently. And I remember during the campaign for president, when he had the audacity to think that he could be president, he was saying it over and over and over again.
I will not criminally prosecute and will change the law to reflect this, anyone seeking refuge or asylum or shelter in this country. But if we rewrite this country's immigration laws, give you a safe, orderly, lawful path to work a job here or join your family, if we help those countries in Central America that are having such a hard time, then I expect you to respect our laws. And we will reserve the right to criminally prosecute those who do not follow our laws.
So we reserve the right to enforce the law after we change immigration and our laws and our process. After we go through comprehensive immigration reform, only then will I reserve the right to enforce the law. This is a guy who is encouraging people to come across the border when he says, if you just say that you're here for asylum, if you're seeking asylum, we'll give you a pass. And we also know that just giving some money to Central American governments hasn't worked. We've been doing that under the Biden administration. Their approach here has been an abject disaster. We all know that. We all know that. So let's cut to the debate over the weekend.
You know, this guy's been governor for 8 years.
This guy, he's been governor.
And this is where we are. Stunts like busing migrants to Chicago or D.C. or New York, or building literally 1.5 miles of border wall. None of that is going to do anything for anyone, much less address the fundamental problems that we have and the opportunity to seek real solutions.
So just real quickly, and I'll let him finish in a bit, what he just said is total nonsense, because it absolutely helps people in Texas. It is not the job of Greg Abbott to develop immigration policy. That's not his job. He is not a federal official. He is a state official. He's the governor of the state. And what he's noticed is that his cities, especially in the southern part of the border, are being overrun with illegal migrants to the point where there's an increase in crime, there's an increase in homelessness, because a lot of these folks are living out on the streets, and they are straining all the resources that they have available to help people, including people who are legal Texans, legal American citizens. And so by removing them from his state, sending them to the literal places that said, we welcome you with open arms as a sanctuary city, he is in fact helping people. But please continue.
Like a Texas-based guest worker program that would allow people to come here and work in jobs that no one born in Texas, really anywhere in this country, are willing to do.
Which is such a bogus claim. No one is willing to do. So what he's basically saying is, we're going to give demeaning jobs with little pay to the brown people. That's what he's saying. I think that that's racist, but call me crazy. I think that's a racist position.
Give them a safe, legal, orderly path to come to this country.
Governors don't do that. Beto O'Rourke knows that. If Beto O'Rourke was the governor of Texas, he would not be able to do what he just said. He knows that.
And then to return to their own. This is something that Democrats, Republicans, independents alike can agree on. If we find that safe, legal, orderly path for those who want to work or...
Okay, so I'm not going to actually play all the rest. Because what he's doing here is a beautiful sleight of hand. He's changing it from what he would have to do and would have the power to do as governor to making this all about federal immigration reform. He has zero control over that. Zero. He would have zero control as governor over that. He knows that. But he also knows that people realize his position and he needs to try to justify it. And so he's going to pivot by saying, oh, no, we just need to help everybody because we're such good people.
The Last Rants.
So something fun happened to me today. Every once in a while, people will reach out to me with tips on stories that I'm maybe interested in, right? Passively interested in. And it's enough for me to say, okay, you know what? Why don't you send me a little bit more information? I'll give it a look. But of course, when I do that, and I think I'm pretty clear usually, is that the expectation isn't I'm dropping everything in order to look at your story. Meaning, you know, I've got a job. I'm not only on the radio. I don't only write. I'm on TV. I'm very busy. And so I can't just drop everything to look at an email that's sent or a direct message that's sent, even if I'm interested in looking at the story initially. So some dude on Friday just sent me some information on a story I was passively interested in, or maybe it was Thursday, I can't remember. And I asked him to email me the information. Instead, he just deluged me with, just overwhelmed me with direct messages, like dozens. And I couldn't even keep up, so I kind of ignored it for a bit until it stopped and then said I would give it a look. Well, this morning, he sends me this angry, very angry, and very demeaning message about how I'm just like the liberals. And then he made some, you know, homophobic reference to what I should do with Tucker Carlson because I didn't give him the answer he was looking for within a short amount of time. Dude, I don't work on your schedule, okay? And with all due respect to everyone who sends me tips, and I am pretty open about this. I'm working on a story right now. The people who sent it to me said this is really important. They wanted to give it to me because they knew I would spend some time and actually look into the story before just jumping into it like some others would. And I said, I appreciate that. And I've said this before. If you're going to send it to a whole bunch of other people, know that I'm probably not going to cover that story. If it's an exclusive to me, know that I'm going to take some time to go into it. I'm not going to take forever if I'm interested. But it does sometimes require me to reprioritize. And sometimes I can't reprioritize. And so if you're going to send me something, the expectation I'm going to reprioritize my entire day to help you and your story, yeah, think again. And you can save the tip. You don't have to send it to me. I appreciate every single person who sends me tips, every single person, except for the people who feel entitled to my attention on a story that I might not think is a story, or frankly, I didn't have enough time yet to look into. If you are in a rush and you're desperate for someone to get the story out, I totally understand it. There are plenty of other people you can reach out to who will help accommodate that. I am acknowledging that the chances of me accommodating that, unless it is a massive story, which this wasn't, I'm not going to be able to just drop everything I'm doing and immediately devote all of my work and attention to it. I just can't. Believe me, I wish I could, because I really am interested. I've got a number of emails in my inbox with promising stories. I'm one person. I do this alone. So cut me a little bit of slack. And if you're not able to, why don't you keep your insults to yourself?